Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to Terry Stone's Criminal Connection podcast. Today, I've got a very special guest, Rachel Warren. You will definitely know the name. You will recognise her as Juicy Lucy from Rise of the Foot Soldier Origins, my girlfriend, my co-star. So put your hands together for Rachel Warren. Whee!
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good to be here. Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. Obviously, you know, we collided in lockdown on Rise of the Foot Soldier Origins, but I've enjoyed working with you, obviously, on a couple of movies, but what I really wanted to do was find out a little bit about you that people watching this podcast won't know. So just wanted to sort of go back to when you was growing up. Aww. And when you was a little girl, and when did you sort of have that calling to be an actress?
Well, it was the age of five, and it was quite a prominent moment. I was watching the television and I was trying to knock into the television to get the characters.
Right.
And my mum was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I want to be in there. And I was like, how? And I kept on looking around the side of the TV, I just didn't get how there were humans on the television. Right. And it fascinated me so much that the whole time. And then from there, I always had this drive to be one of those humans on the TV.
So it's good at five, you know what you want to do.
Yeah, I knew at five and I'm still here now.
Yeah, amazing. So obviously you grew up, where did you go to school?
So I went to Maidenhead College,
right,
to start with, and then I went to Queen Anne's in Caversham.
Right.
And then from there, my family wanted me to go on and get an education and go to uni.
Right.
But I still wanted to be one of those people on the telly. So... Right. at that stage, they were like, education, education. And I was like, I can't. I'd want to do this. I don't want to do that. And everybody told me not to.
Right.
So I decided to put a proposal together for my dad.
Right.
And I pretty much said, look, I can still get a degree, but it could be in acting. And I put a pitch deck kind of thing together for dad.
Excellent.
And went, here we go. This is what I can do. I just need to get to drama school. And then I could maybe get some recognition from there. Then I'll get an agent, so on and so forth.
Right. So at school, I take it, going through the ranks, you was doing drama at school. You was in school plays. Did you play Mary in the Nativity play?
No, I played the star.
Oh, right.
I was just a star in the background.
My daughter did that as well.
Really?
Yeah, oh. she played a star. Oh. But I think all girls sort of kind of want to be Mary, you know?
Always.
Yeah.
Well, actually, at school, I knew I wanted to do this, obviously. And I was so excited. And it was in year five.
Right.
I was so excited because Cinderella was on.
Right.
So I was like, yes, I can be Cinderella. And that was my favourite, like, Disney film growing up. I used to pretend and scrub floors and stuff and tell mum to boss me around so I could be Cinderella. So I used to do that and be like, yeah, I'm Cinders. And did the casting and looked at the name board and I got cast as the king.
The king?
The king.
Wow.
So I literally...
How long ago was that?
When I was in year five.
Wow.
So I was a tiny little one. And I was like, right, well, and obviously I was sad, but I thought I'm going to be the best king I can be.
Right.
So I stood strong and stood upright and delivered my lines. And you can see.
Did you put on a deep voice?
Yeah, I did. And I tried to be the king. And then that led to, and I was.
Come on,
honestly,
give us your best king. Come on.
How did I say it?
No, it's more like that.
It was that.
Let
the show commence, Cinderella. So I did that. But then the following year on, I think my drama school teacher realised how obsessed I was. And then I ended up being Alice in Wonderland
in
year six. So amazing. Made up for that.
Yeah. And obviously you went to some nice schools.
Mm.
And where did you, was it Surrey you grew up?
So I grew up in Berkshire.
Berkshire.
So, it was literally next to Surrey.
So, yeah. So you were a Berkshire girl and, you know, the sort of roles, I mean, when you sort of did your uni bit, I mean, did your dad sort of sign off on the pitch deck? Did he say yes?
So, dad read it through and in there I said I had to go, because I was still quite young, I still wasn't ready for uni because I had to do A-levels.
Okay.
So there was still one step. So I was still kind of like 15 when I was doing this.
Right.
And I researched into colleges that had a great reputation to then get into drama school.
Right.
So I actually went to Henley College and did a BTEC National Diploma in Performing Arts. So I pitched that to Dad.
Right.
Now, when I was there, there was a director who said, I'd really want you to be in my play at Edinburgh Festival in the summer holidays. I knew my parents weren't going to let me go because they still had that kind of thing of, you know, you're still really young, we're not going to let you go. So I said yes to the director and I got on a plane without my parents knowing and I started acting in a play at the Edinburgh Festival.
You're so naughty, Rachel.
I'm so
you
naughty.
Really are naughty. That's why she's on the Criminal Connection podcast, because she's very naughty.
I'm so naughty. So then mum called me and was like, Rachel, where are you? Because she thought I was out on the bikes with my friends.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I'm not coming home. And she was like, what? And I said, I'm working. I've got a job for the summer. And she went, where are you? I was like, Scotland. So the next minute they're on a flight over. They suss it out and then they realise I'm in the show. It ended up winning awards.
Amazing.
So from there, I think they realised there's just no, just she has to do what she's got to do because she's gonna do it.
It's funny because I think lots of parents that'll be watching this podcast will be like, yeah, you know, acting is a silly career, it's a pipe dream. And you know, even, you know, people that have become, you know, well-established actors, their parents have said, when are you gonna get a proper job? So I don't think people think that acting is a proper job. I don't know why, but, you know, but I think, you know, it's sort of like, you know, what do you want to be? I want to be an actor. Yeah, but what do you actually want to do? Do you know what I mean? Nobody,
always.
Yeah.
It's always that, oh, yeah, what else do you do? It's
but,
like...
But I think whatever you do in life, you should have a go. Do you know what I mean? And whether it works, whether it doesn't work, whatever happens, happens. But I think you have to have a go. And I think with kids especially growing up, if they actually have a direction or a vision, you should encourage them to follow that because, you know... I'd hate to bring my kids up and say to them, do this, do that, do this, do that, and they do it, and then they go, and then they don't end up being what they want to be, or they don't achieve what they want to achieve, and then they blame me and say, well, you didn't let me do what I want to do, you made me do this.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, giving people freedom and encouragement, you know, but I kind of get why your parents probably was like, but then the fact that
I was
they,
live wire as well. That, so
when did they sort of go over and actually sort of go, okay?
They, when I was at, basically when I got to the Edinburgh Festival.
Got it.
And I think from there, when they saw me.
Did they fly up and come and watch
you? Yeah,
oh,
they had to. They, straight away they were on the plane. So I'm like, where is she? And why is she now in Scotland all of the summer? She's saying she's got a job. And I did, and I got paid. I got my first pay and everything by doing acting at Edinburgh Festival.
Right.
So from there, that's when it was a no-brainer.
Right.
So I was just like, right, now I need to go and apply for these drama schools.
Right.
Because I had no connections.
Right.
Talking about connections.
Yeah.
I had no connections into the industry at all. So right. I had to work from the ground up to get where I am now.
And when you went to... yeah, where did you end up going after you did your BTEC?
I went to Arts Educational, the School of Acting in Chiswick.
Right, how long was you there for?
3 years.
Wow. So what was the fun part of that? Being a tree or what?
I have been a tree. I was the best tree.
I've got to ask you, right, because yeah. I did do acting training and I did do a 2-year Meisner Technic course and I've done different things because I wanted to obviously learn the acting craft, but I didn't go to drama school.
Intense.
But, you know, what is the... I've always wondered what being a tree is, what it does. And I'm sure everybody watching at home is wondering why, you know, what being a tree does when you're an actor, how it helps.
Do you know what? Your focus. If you actually have to... Do you really want me to go actory?
I'm just interested to know what it is.
So if you're a tree, right. This is just an example.
To tree or not to tree, that is a question.
So now we're going to tree. Think of you anchoring on the ground.
Right.
So the breath work that you do to centre yourself. And then you feel your feet rooted on the floor.
Right.
Then feel that energy from the floor going up. I'm guessing that then becomes the tree trunk.
When you stand up, Do you put your arms out like branches or do you stand like that? What sort of tree are you?
Depends what season it's in. Right. What season do you want the tree to be in? Do I spread my leaves out or are my leaves gone?
Right.
So, yeah, it just... I mean, we're talking about being a tree. But, yeah, so then that comes up and then you hold your own. By, right. So that is like your anchor.
Right.
And then feel that energy from the floor, that hold yourselves and that can present yourself, I think, and then just be the tree you want to be.
I'm glad that you've cleared this up because I've always wondered about being a tree. Now I know why you'd be a tree.
Are you able to give us a little demonstration of you being a tree?
I could do, but I'd have to stand up and obviously I'm sitting down and obviously we're having this conversation, but I will, after the podcast, I'll happily be a tree over there and show you my best tree.
Thanks, Terry. Can't wait.
So with drama school, you know, lots of people say, you know, they strip it away. It's like an onion. They peel it all the layers back. What was your sort of going through the 3-year, you know, journey? Would you say there was? Do you think there was? It was all good and it was all valuable, or do you think there was bits of it that were a little bit just like, you know, didn't really work? Because I know they have to just generally teach everybody, and everybody has different ways of getting into things.
Yeah. I think genuinely I was very lucky and I loved drama school. And even to this day, it's one of the happiest times of my whole entire life.
Oh, really?
Being there, yeah. Because
wow.
I got to exercise and act and be involved in it all the time. So I loved it and I love learning. So it was genuinely on the basis really good. the downfall of drama school is they do not prepare you for after.
Right.
So when you leave drama school, so they wrap you up in cotton wool, they do strip you down, and there was bits which I, which probably wouldn't be acceptable now, where we all had to be in leotards, like we're training to be actors, I was on the actor course, right. But then we're in leotards, and then having to be animals on the floor, and we did animal studies, and I had to be a gorilla, and you're sitting in a leotard. So it's those sort of things where you're like, okay, back then, and then you become body conscious.
Right.
And then there's a lot of things that go...
Did the men wear leotards as well?
Yeah.
See, that, I mean, you know, I don't know...
You'd be in a little unitard.
I don't know if I'd be able to pull that off, Rachel. I'd
love to see that, God, too.
Look at Terry in a leotard.
It being a tree.
Yeah, being a tree. That is an image that you cannot unsee.
We've got to see this.
When I entered into the acting space, I actually had some good advice. It was, you need to have really thick skin and you need to be really resilient. Because people do say mean things. People do, they don't necessarily give you feedback. And I think, you know, sometimes, I mean, it's probably changed a little bit now, but I think in the early days, and I'm talking 20 years ago, people would say, you know, oh, you're too fat, or you're too skinny, or your nose is too big, or...
I got that.
Yeah, or, you know, you're not pretty enough, you're ugly. I mean, people were quite brutal in what they said.
Oh, they were. I got down to the last three for one thing, for a soap on television, and got down to the last three, and they said I had the wrong cheekbones.
Right.
So I didn't get the job because of my cheekbones. Right. And I was like, what am I meant to do? Like, go and get surgery and do something about my cheekbones because I really want this role. And then I got down to the last two for another soap. Huge role. And they literally said I was too fresh looking.
Right.
And I was like, well, you can definitely, like...
Unfresh me.
You can definitely unfresh me. Have you seen me without makeup? Gosh. It's like, yeah. So it's really hard. It's really, really hard, and it does take a lot of tenacity, thick skin. There are times where I think comments and feedback could hurt, but you've just got to think, don't worry about those comments and feedback, because they're far few compared to the other side of what is the industry and why are you in it? Mm. And it's like, just keep moving forward and keep yourself in the present and just ignore the negativity, because you don't need that in your life.
Well, I think the biggest problem is, like you said, you do get that sort of, you know, when you're auditioning, when you're doing different things. But then obviously when the TV series, soap, film, whatever comes out, then obviously you also care from the critics as well. Lots of very famous actors have all said the same thing. I don't read my reviews. And no. I don't read what people say on social media because
can't.
If you do, and you know, people do thrive on, you know, they go on the computer to upset people, wind people up, and you know, I can't remember who it was, but there was a celebrity who put on a little bit of weight because I think it was a lady and she had a baby, and people were just trolling her saying, "Oh, you're fat.
Oh, it's awful.
Stop eating the donuts," and all this, and it's like.
She's
you
pregnant.
Know, why would you do that to somebody online you don't even know, you know what I mean? And people, I think if you let that affect you, I mean, that's probably one of the reasons why there's such a problem with mental health. There never used to be. People would have mental health issues. They'd be depressed or, you know, they would be hearing voices telling them to kill people. So there's always been mental health issues.
Yeah.
But I think now there's a lot more than ever, and there's something driving this. And I think a lot of it is, I think what social media has done is given people a voice to say whatever they want about whoever they want without any repercussions. But I think you're actually finding that some of this is actually seeping through into real life where people actually think it's okay to be brutally frank to people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had Emily Wyatt on the other day, and when we did the last heist... When we did the last heist together, she never said to me I was pregnant, right? But she turned up on set and I looked at her and I was like, she looks so different. Yeah. And obviously she's normally like a size six.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, but being the consummate professional, I never even said anything about her weight.
No.
But then she said to me, she said, oh, you know, I look, how do I look? And I was like, yeah, you look fine. And she said, well, you know, I'm 6 months pregnant. I was like, But the funny thing is, she didn't tell me because she thought that I might not have then put her in a movie, but I would have put her in a movie.
Yes.
It wouldn't have made any difference to me whether she was pregnant or not. But
this is our fear. Like, this is known. And I think what is really sad, and I've been doing this as well, right, is you're like, oh, gosh, I've just got this role and I've just been casting this role. I can't get pregnant now until that role is done. And you keep on pushing back when you're actually going to, and it shouldn't be that way. You should put your family life first and then be like, right, well, yeah, I'm pregnant. What does this role need? And this is the question now, and I'm really, really passionate about this, is if a role is specifically for someone that isn't pregnant, so you could still, as a doctor, you could still be pregnant. As a therapist, you could be pregnant. As a mother, there's so many roles. There's a bar girl for Emily in Last Heist. She can be pregnant. She can be a pregnant bar girl. There's no reason for women not to be pregnant, but it's just what the industry make us feel like.
Yeah.
And a lot of acting roles, you could still be pregnant and you could actually work with the bump. Right. Like on Money Heist, the TV show, the actress in there, she was pregnant and she was like a lady boss and she was real badass. And it was cooler because she was so cutthroat and she was called in the shots and she was really tough. But then she's got a big bump and she's walking around pregnant with this bump. It just looked really cool.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is what I want to do that. I want to show that you can act and work and have a baby bump, but work it into your character and make it part of it, which I think women should be able to do more.
Absolutely.
and not have this thing of, oh, God, she's pregnant. You can't use her. Now you have to use her.
But I would have used her anyway. But, I know, you would have. And then she was like, oh, we should have told you. I said, yeah, I'm, you know.
But
no, it's funny. But so going back to, you know, you come out of drama school and you've obviously done your first paid job, you know, in the Edinburgh Festival. Mm-hmm. And then when did you have an agent then, or did you get an agent after that?
So I got signed up. I was very fortunate. I actually got the lead role in the third year show at ArtsEd.
Right, okay.
So very, very grateful. I did work very hard. I don't mind saying I had, in my first year of ArtsEd, I had a breakdown.
Right.
And I was hospitalised, so I had to retake the year and start over.
What caused that? Was it just...
It's me. It was putting so much pressure on myself
to
be the best I could, because this has been a dream since I was five, still wanting to be those people on the those humans.
Right.
So I would be early, like 10, 15 minutes early for school every single day.
Right.
I'd be listening. I'd overwork in the night of all my notes. I drove myself because I wanted to succeed, because I was so happy to be there.
Right.
Idiot. But I was so happy to finally be at drama school that I wanted to be the best version of myself I could be. And then that led to overworking, not sleeping properly, over-exercising, probably under-eating, to be this actress. And that is not the way to do it, like, be yourself.
So did you know you was having a breakdown then? Or?
No, I didn't. My energy was, like, I was only 18.
Right.
I had a lot of other stuff going on as well that I was dealing with privately, with family and all sorts of other stuff. And so I had all that going on at the same time. And then I was overworking there and probably throwing myself even more into work to counterbalance it. And then, I ended up just one day just blacking out.
Wow.
And then, the nurses said, there's a scale of ambition from here to here. All I can remember is this. Scale of ambition. This is no ambition and this is too much ambition. You need to be here.
Right.
And it's like a scale. And she said, you were over the ambition side.
Right.
So I was like this. So now I'm always have this like little line where right. I'm just like, oh, I'm going too much, pull myself back.
I mean, so there was something good that came out of that, because then you identified it. And when you had the breakdown, what actually happened? Did you actually like collapse, or was you crying, or was you just depressed? Or?
Completely crying. The crying came after, so I just couldn't breathe right. and then passed out like panic attack style. Right. But even not very dramatic, it was like a, and then just gone. And right. then I was just weak, like really skinny, really weak, really ill, right. just ill. And I was trying to say I wasn't.
Right.
Because I'm that sort of person.
Did you sort of go to a doctor or?
Yes, I was in hospital. And that's when they were teaching me the scale of
right.
ambition and no ambition
right.
and how to balance it out. And I always tell people now, right. like, I feed that onto people because it's like life balance, isn't it? Work, right. life, health, fitness, that. Get it all right and then you're in your happy place.
Right.
So, yeah, so I had to learn. I was in bed for about 3 months right. after at home. Built myself back up again, and then the drama school, Arts Ed, said, it was Jane Harrison, said we would love her back if she wanted to come back, because she's got the talent and she's got right. everything to be here. So yeah. and they didn't take payment or anything. They that, would just like
was,
come back.
That was nice of them to do that. And when, so then when yeah. you went back, did you sort of go back with a new sort of lease of life, because you sort of thought, right, I now know what I mustn't do.
Yes.
Which then...
Overwork.
Yeah.
It's been all my life I've been too much of an overworker. Yeah, I went back, but it was it was hard because the year above were my year.
Right.
And then suddenly I'm in a new year.
Right.
But I'm blessed now because I still have friends from that year. I just had a housewarming last weekend with them.
Right.
Like there's seven of girls that are like best friends. So I in the end went into the.
Did you have a group? Did you have a name for your group? Were you like the Spice Girls or what were you called?
Probably, probably more like the Witches. I don't know. But yeah, so yeah, we're tight, and right, we're amazing. Like sisters now because we've been through so much together.
Yeah, brilliant.
So yeah, I'm blessed to have taken the year again because I've got these girls for life.
Right.
And some of the guys too.
Yeah, and then obviously you left. You played the lead in this sort of end of term play.
Yeah.
And then you.
Nana.
Which was it?
It was called Nana, and I was Nana.
Oh, right. And yeah. and then you got an agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then what would you say was your first. I hate to use the word big break, right? Because playing the lead in your school play was a big break.
Yeah.
Being in Edinburgh, getting paid for it's a big break. But when you actually thought, wow, I've actually got a job on TV or a job in a film. When was that?
In the second year out of drama school, I got a role in ITV The Royal.
Right.
Which is a spin-off of Heartbeat.
Right.
And that was exciting because that was the first time I'm ever... Now, I felt like it was my big break at the time. It was right. only two episodes of a TV show. Yeah. But I felt like I did because finally I was... the person in the box.
Right.
So for me, that was like amazing. But I got it because I can horse ride properly.
Right, wow.
So, and then when I went onto the set as well, the stunt man, Clive Curtis, amazing guy, saw me ride and he right. was like, okay. He says, you can actually ride. And I was like, well, yeah, I said I can. And he went, no, loads of actors say they can ride and they can't even trot.
Right,
and there
right.
I am cantering the horse round. And right. I was like, do you want me to pop it over the jump? And they're like, right. yes. And so I ended up doing most of my own stunts that I was allowed to do
right.
because my character basically has to jump and then fall off a horse and dislocate a shoulder.
Right.
So I did all the jumping over the three jumps and then the stunt girl got on to do the fall. But right. yeah, so it was amazing.
When you get a job and you feel, wow, it's for the TV, you know, it's a film, you think, wow, you know, I wonder where it's going to lead. And the weird thing for a lot of actors, sometimes, you know, you can just be lucky and get a role and then that catapults you. But then lots of other people get roles and it goes out and then nothing happens. And then they're like, oh, you know,
yep.
and then they keep going back again. And, you know, I think the most frustrating thing, well, there's two actually of being an actor. One is when you get a job and then it comes out. and then nothing happens.
Yes.
Or when you audition and you get through to the final two or three. Yeah. And then you
don't too many times.
And it is annoying. It is annoying.
Vikings. I got down to the last three to be in Vikings. That would have changed my life. Right. And again, it's... And you put so much work into it. And the auditions, when you get the sides through and then suddenly you're having to do an accent and then you're having to do a character and change your body language and everything just to fit that role. Yeah. And then you get a recall and then you get another recall. And you're like, oh, it's so close, it's so there. And then they're like, oh, yeah, they love you so much, but they're gone with someone else. You're like, thanks. Just taken over my life for the last month thinking and doing work for it, but it's all right.
And obviously your career and the character you've played have always been, you know, would you say well-to-do characters? and then obviously, you know, lockdown happens, and then you got an audition for Rise of the Foot Soldier.
And I did.
And obviously I probably didn't actually get to meet you properly, but I know you come to a few of the premieres, and obviously knew you was around as an actress, but never really sort of had a proper chat to you. And then I remember I get this like weird phone call saying, you know, I'm thinking of doing the Tony Tucker story. And I was like, okay, well, that sounds all right. You know, do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, why not? Mm-hmm. And then sort of didn't think anything of it. And then, oh, here's a script. And I was like, wow, we've got a script. and Nick's going to direct it. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then obviously, you know, we started to get people like Keith Allen and Vinnie Jones. And, you know, it then starts becoming super real, super exciting. And then I remember Andy rang me up and he goes, we've got three finalists for Tony's gal, aww, Juicy Lucy. And Juicy I was like, oh, who is it? You know, and like this. And I was like, oh, right, okay. And I don't know if you know, but Kirsty, who played the
DCI Jones,
who arrested me in the movie, she was going to play Lucy as well. So it was quite funny. And I've known Kirsty for years. So I was like, well, look, whoever ends up playing Lucy, it'd be great, you know. And then it was like, look, Nick loves Rachel. Rachel's done the best job in our view. And we think Kirsty done a great job, but we like her as, you know, and this always happens, you know, the roles you get through, just because you don't get them doesn't mean that if they like you enough, they're going to put you in something else. So,
well, this is a great example as well to show that, you know, I got cast as a lead in it, and it's been, to be honest, that was the best news I could have had. And
we're in lockdown as well.
It was satisfaction after everything I've been through to get recognised, and Andy recognised me, Andy Loveday, and I just owe him everything really for it, because he put my name on the map. But it shows that with Kirsty, she auditioned for that and she is a phenomenal actress.
Very good.
Really good. But then Vengeance is coming out, and she's in that one.
Yeah.
So it shows, this is for actors to know that if you don't get cast as a lead in one thing, but they give you another role that's a little bit smaller in that same film, that's amazing, because now Kirsty did that and she nailed it. And then she got this role in Vengeance on top of it. So she's in two of the Foot Soldiers now. So it does show.
So the question I've got for you, right, is, you've played these well-to-do characters. You've obviously done Shakespeare. You've done all these, like, roles which are, you know, what I'd maybe call quaint, right? And then you basically become, darling. Oh, darling. Oh, darling.
Sweetie.
But then you become this sort of, you know, gangster's mole, gangster bitch, hard-nosed Essex bird, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And when you sort of read the script and you was getting into the character, obviously it's completely different to what you are as a person, and obviously roles you've done previously. So did you sort of study any films where there's been actresses playing these types of roles and then think, actually, I want to do something like what she did? Or are there any actresses in in these films that you've always looked up to and gone, wow, you know, I'd love to be like Amanda Redman, or I'd love to be like That's Michelle Pfeiffer in Scarface, you know what I mean? So
it was Amanda Redman in Sexy Beast.
Right.
Back in the day that I looked at, this is before I got cast in Foot Chuck, this was years ago.
Right.
And I watched her in Sexy Beast, and Sexy Beast in itself to me was like, oh my God, these guys. And it was a bit, I was quite infatuated.
Do you know my favourite bit of that
by
film
by the criminal and the gangster world. I was like, oh, wow. Because it's so different from me.
Right.
So I was actually quite infatuated.
Was that your first gangster film you saw?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did that then lead you into watching other gangster films or not?
Not really.
Right.
Not really.
You just watched that.
And I was like, I want to be her in something like this.
My favourite part of Sexy Beast was when Sir Ben Kingsley says cunt. That
yes,
is
that's so
the best,
good.
The best.
It's
and
so
I,
good.
And I remember just laughing and people going like, what's funny about that? And I said, Sir Ben Kingsley saying the word cunt. It's the funniest film I've ever seen in my life.
Yes.
And I don't know how Ray Winston kept a straight face, because every time...
I bet he didn't.
Like, Sir Ben, because he likes to be called Sir Ben. Sir Ben, you know, if I laugh, it's not because... I don't believe you, but I just think it's funny when you say that word.
Yeah, I know. How could you not? It's like, wow. Yeah.
And if you haven't seen Sexy Beast, you've got to watch it. Yeah. Just so that you can hear Sir Ben Kingsley saying the word cunt. It's very funny.
So
Amanda Redman was someone that you looked up to as an actress. What other actresses did you sort of admire, you know, being an actress yourself and looking up and saying, I wouldn't mind having her career, or I wouldn't mind, you know, performing like that in something?
So... Cate Blanchett is the one.
Right.
I was fortunate enough when I was younger. There we go. I'm going to be naughty again here. Sorry, Art said you're going to hear the truth.
Put your hand out.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. So basically, when I was at drama school, my friend's uncle was a special effects makeup artist.
Right.
And he was working with Brad Pitt and Cate Blanchett on Babel.
Right.
So he said to me, do you want to come and work and be like the one I work on the shoulder with? Because Cate Blanchett gets shot on a bus. So I said, obviously, I was like, yeah. So at the weekend or something, I ended up going to Cate Blanchett's house.
Right.
And sitting with her, and she served me tea. And it was just, she was so inclusive and so kind, but so normal.
Right.
So she's definitely not out for the press and this and the fame and chasing all of that stuff.
Amazing.
And she is phenomenal. So I went there, and then she actually invited me to go to Morocco to be in her trailer and to be her body double stunt of the shoulder.
Right.
So the shoulder where she gets shot is actually me falling.
I didn't know you did shoulder acting as well.
I'm
a woman of many talents.
I'm a shoulder actor, darling. So I did that. So I got to work with Brad and Kate on there. And she, the way she was on set inspired me. I was like 19.
Right.
So I was so inspired, but I was really shy at the same time. And I knew where my place was. And I was very quiet, actually. But the thing that got me was when she went onto set, like she was half dying and then Brad was carrying her and she was crying, but she'd play with her kids at the side, like mummy. And then suddenly they're like, okay, right, Kate, we need you on set. And she'd literally go, okay, put the kids down, get into character like this, and then just perform this most beautiful, underacted, gorgeous scene right in front of my eyes. And I was like, that is what I want to be like.
Right.
Just understated, kind, humble, but giving those performances that actually make so much of a difference and so powerful. But the thing about that as well was, this is a shout out to Brad Pitt, actually.
Right.
Because
Bradders,
my mate Brad, we both were scared of wasps.
Right.
Because he had blood all over him. And I was standing there, I had a pot of blood, and these wasps were coming. So we ended up running away from wasps in this desert in the middle of nowhere, scared. And we were both like, ah. But it was actually Kate's birthday on one of the days.
Right.
And I was sitting in her trailer, and then they called her, and they're like, hey, Kate. So she was standing in the doorway looking out of her trailer with people, and they started singing happy birthday. And I know my place, so I just hid. I hid at the side of the trailer because I didn't want to get in the photos or anything, because that's her moment.
So I'd be in the back like that, bombing.
Terrible, like, hey, hey, I'm here.
Like.
Yeah. And so I kind of hid. And then she went down and they all said, thank you. And then there was a knock at the trailer door. So I kind of opened it and then Brad was there. And he was like, what are you doing? He was like, come on, you're involved in this too. And he handed me a piece of cake and included me into the circle. So, yeah.
That's amazing. What a great story.
There you go.
So you're getting into this role for Lucy, going back to Foot Soldier.
Yes, yes.
Amanda, you're channeling your inner Amanda Redman.
Yeah.
And what was it like when you was, I mean, did you sort of...
I had to do a little research.
Yeah. And where did you what research did you do?
I watched back to back every single Foot Soldier.
Right.
So as soon as that, before I did the audition, I watched the Marbella one.
Right.
And got in the swing of that. But then I watched.
The Marbella one's the funniest, isn't it?
Yeah. I watched, which is the one Kirsten Waring was in?
The first one, Rise of the Foot Soldier, which is the original.
So then I watched that one.
Right.
Because I was like, oh, okay, that's a funny one. And I was trying to relate to an actress in there that I could relate and get the persona of Lucy, and that was Kirsten.
Yeah.
So watching her performance, I was like, okay, there's a bit more, it's more about the eyes, it's more about like body language, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So then I watched all of them religiously before I came on. I ended up talking like Lucy in the shops. I ended up bringing her on.
Did you start calling people Treacle?
All right, Treacle.
All right, Treacle, can you get one of them?
Can I have that, please? Oh, yeah. Do you want a line? So, yeah, I did. I needed to make sure that I didn't look like a complete nincompoop.
Did you become Lucy?
So I tried to become Lucy. And then Nick was great, because I said to him, I was like, so I don't go Essex, should we make one of the lines to say, I grew up in Surrey, and now I live in Basildon.
Right.
So that if there was any tweaks or anything, that it would be fine for the thing.
Right.
So, yeah, we slipped that in there too.
Covered your back.
Thanks, Nick.
Covered your back.
Yeah.
Just in case you slipped.
Just in case.
Into Berkshire.
Yeah. In case I slipped into Surrey or Berkshire, darling.
And when you was on the set, I mean, obviously, the Rise of the Foot Soldier sets are always full of banter and full of laughter. I mean... Have you got any funny stories?
I just laughed the whole time. You couldn't not.
How'd you get on with a Cockney rhyming slang?
Oh, so basically, on the Rise of the Foot Soldier, I was coming out of my hotel room
in sunny Southend.
In Southend, and there was a group of the Foot Soldier lot outside, and they were like, "Rachel, how you doing?" Like this, and I was like, "Yeah, good." And they were just like, how's your room? And I was like, yeah, it's good. It was like, oh, mine's mustard, like this. And I was like, oh, no, I think my room's cream.
And if you don't know, mustard means good.
Yeah, so that I ended up, they all looked at me and then obviously ripped into me for being very Surrey, Berkshire girl, which was really funny. Like, I couldn't stop laughing. And then later on, I think it was another day, we were all on set.
Right.
It's just embarrassing.
No, but it's funny.
I know. So.
Well, we think it's funny anyway.
Yeah. I know, you lot will. God, I'm going to get, the DMs are going to go nuts, like taking the mick out of me. And then we were on set and I think it was Andy or Nick or someone went, oh, the boat's coming. The boat's coming, like this. So I was like. And I was looking, obviously we're Southend on sea, so I was kind of looking to see where the boat was. And I was thinking in my head, I started panicking, going, I did not read about a boat. And I was like, have I got the scene? I don't read the script. I think I was in the wrong film or I hadn't read about this boat. So I was sitting there just kind of panicking. Actually, I was standing, I remember, and I was in a dressing gown and I was panicking about like the boat scene. And I was like, I didn't read about a boat. Next minute, Vinnie Jones walks in.
And a boat, for those that don't know, basically means somebody who's a face. Boat race face.
Boat race face. That's it. And there I am, stressing about a boat scene that I hadn't read.
Was there any other... So basically, if you've got any Cockney rhyming slang, please send Rachel a DM on Instagram.
Oh, no.
and ask her a question and include a Cockney rhyming slang, because you could get some really funny responses.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I didn't know what pony was for ages.
That's another one. Was you looking for a horse?
I was looking for a horse. And I was like, oh, I love ponies. Like, yeah. They're so cute.
And they're all looking at you like, why does she like ponies?
Yeah.
Again, if you don't know what a pony is, pony and trap, crap, going for poo in the loo, you know, it's all sort of linked. It's all rhyming, you know?
So, yeah. Apparently it's all rhyming. So I was like, where's the horses and where's the ponies?
I suppose it's a bit weird, isn't it, when someone says, oh, I'm just going for pony. And you're like, what? And if you know what it is, you know.
Yeah.
So you're going to ride on your pony or you're...
Yeah.
How are you having a pony? What are you... Kissing the pony?
And being a horse rider,
right.
You kind of think, where's the pony? Like, I want to get my leg over the pony. But that's really the wrong thing to say as well when you know what it means.
So what, was there any other Cockney rhyming slang?
Bottle.
Faux pas. Oh, bottle as well.
Bottle, which is bum, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, which I had no idea
about. But they don't really call it bottom, they call it arse.
Oh,
I don't know. Nobody goes, yeah. You've got the lovely bottom.
Bottom.
They might be in Berkshire, but not in Essex.
So, yeah, that was another one, which is fun. Because obviously the scene with Lucy, that was fun.
So now
I
when
had
you're
to learn what bottle meant.
So when you're wandering about now, you're like, yeah, I'm going out to apples and pears.
Oh.
Do you know what? I'm just going to quickly have a pony.
Yeah.
And I saw this boat the other day. So you're literally just fluent Cockney, haven't you?
I am fluent.
Fluent.
Yeah, defo. So proud.
Did your parents or any of your family see Foot Soldier Oranges?
Of course.
I know they did, but what was their view on it? Was they like, right, you should do more of this or don't do it ever again?
Oh, they're like my biggest cheerleaders now.
Oh,
so that's the other thing. With my parents, I couldn't have better cheerleaders than my own family, so I'm very lucky now. So when the Foot Soldier came out, obviously we had it in 250 cinemas.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it because the Showcase near where I live was a cinema that I used to go to a lot when I was younger and it was in there. And I was like, oh my gosh, the film. I'm in a film in the cinema that I used to go to as a kid. Like, I was so happy.
Well, it's goosebumps, isn't it?
It is one of those moments. So actually 19 of my family members were all there. And including my fiancé, Jed, his granddad and grandma and my dad's partner as well, who is she's very kind of well to do. So we went in to watch The Foot Soldier, and then when I was sitting there, because you forget, don't you, after you've filmed it and stuff, you kind of move on, and then when you go to watch it, you kind of forget the scenes that you've done.
Well, I know we had a slightly saucy scene together.
Slightly, we had a lot of saucy scenes.
Did you when it did you sort of go like that to Jed? Did you sort of put your hand over his eyes?
No. Okay. So with Jed, I said to him, if my family watch this. I said, do you want me to act it out on you? Like this to him. He went, yeah, that could work. And then he went, no, that's not going to work. It's not going to work. So so it was very funny at the time. Yeah. But he knows it's work.
Yeah, of course.
But when we were at the cinema, so when the film was going on, suddenly, obviously, the Lucy things and our scenes together.
Right.
I suddenly just died in my chair because I realised who was there in the audience.
Right.
And I was like, you know, Jed's mum, Jed's dad, Jed's family and my family. And there I am with you on the thing. And I'm like, but they, you know, when you're like, oh my God. So I died a little bit. And then I was like, oh, just, it's fine. It's fine. Just let's get over it. And obviously the language as well.
Yeah.
The C-bombs, the F-bombs.
There's a lot of naughty words. A lot of naughty
words. It's just all naughty really, isn't it?
So you've got to be over 18 to watch it.
Yeah, you definitely do. So it's a very naughty film. And, I came out and I said to Jed's granddad, I was like, oh, granddad, what did you think? And he went, well, yes, I learned a few new words, that's for sure. And that's all he said.
That is so funny.
I said to my mum-in-law.
It'd been even funny if he'd have said, I actually quite prefer you as Lucy, you're quite a sort.
No, I'm like, sort. That's another word, sort. A sort is something I learned. Yeah. You're a sort. So what's a sort mean? But yeah,
I know about liquid all sorts.
Yeah, liquid all sorts. That's fine. Which flavour, darling? So, and then I asked my stepmom, what did you think? and she just nodded.
Right.
So that's kind of afterwards the feedback. But obviously, my dad loved it.
Yeah.
My dad was so proud, and my mum, and they were just like, my mum still talks about it now. And I think
what was good about Rise of the Foot Soldier Origins, and I talked to a lot of male and female people about, because I'm always interested in getting feedback on, you know, because normally you say foot soldiers like a lad's film, right? Yeah. But what was good, I think, about Origins, it was a nice balance.
Yeah.
And it was probably the first foot soldier film where you brought in these stronger female characters. And, you know, obviously it's about the boys, but the girls were like major supporters of the boys in the film. And lots of girls that I spoke to all said the same thing. They all said, I don't know, there's something about Origins. The Foot Soldier 4 was funny. Like, it was like sort of Only Fools and Horses meet Scarface type thing. But Origins had something about it, which, you know, Vinnie Jones obviously, you know, coming in was cool. Having these, you know, new actresses coming in and having these new strong female characters in it made it, yeah, I think a lot more women seem to like the last two than like the ones previously. Yeah. And all the guys, obviously, you know, when they watch it, it doesn't matter if you're working class, middle class or upper class. Yeah. After you watch the film, everyone starts walking out of cinema or, you know, it sort of helps you release your inner lad.
Oh, it does. And I definitely have an inner lad.
Right.
I'm like,
so Lucy was really sort of like a bit of a lad.
Yeah.
A ladette.
She was. She set up part of the scene in one of them, didn't she?
Yeah.
So.
And you know, doing that film and obviously when it came out, what, you must have had some people sort of messaging you. You must have had various interviews. What sort of things did people ask you about being in that film? And were they sort of shocked that you decided to sort of pop up in one of those films doing a role that you don't normally play?
Yeah, I think people were... I keep going American, sorry. I'm doing a lot of American stuff at the moment. Right. So people were saying to me that they're excited because they know I like a challenge as an actor. And they know that I never want to be typecast.
Right.
So for me, this was an opportunity to be like, to keep that going for versatile actors. Because I think even more than nowadays, if you're not from the area and you don't do the accent, they just go for the person from that area.
Right.
When acting back in the day, we had to learn our own accents. We had to learn our own body language. It didn't matter if you were from, I don't know, UK, America, whatever. We were able to be versatile, to be able to get a script and completely transform ourselves.
Right.
To play that role, which I think nowadays the opportunities are becoming less and less, and you have to pretty much talk like yourself, walk like yourself. And
well, this is just personal opinion, but I think what's happened in acting now is a tragedy because actors are playing themselves. You know, they're not allowing people to act anymore, and you know, for me, that sort of strips away the reason people become actors. They want to play different. You know, some actors master any accent, you know, they could change their appearance. You know, that to me is acting.
It's like, as actors, we just want to tell stories.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't really matter about anything else. If you're right for the role and can deliver a really believable performance for the audience to connect with and believe, that is what I think acting is in a nutshell.
Yeah, because if people...
And it should still just be that.
If people didn't know your work before Foot Soldier, and they'd seen you in that film, oh, she's a good actress. Oh, I've not seen her before. Right? And then all of a sudden you've got people that are Rachel Warren fans, you know, but they might not have been before because they've not seen your work because you've not been in one of those types of films.
And I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have had that opportunity in other areas because I'm now from Surrey and, you know, I haven't got the right accent or maybe the demeanour or whatever.
Right.
But Nick and Andy gave me that chance.
Yeah.
And I was able to then, and it's just the best. It's you're able to then explore and research and become someone different. And when you're in the zone, as you know, when you're in the zone playing someone totally different from yourself, that's when the magic happens.
Yeah.
And that's when you're in it so much and you're actually believing in the scene. And you're like after, and I always get mind blanks after.
Right.
When I've delivered a performance and I've been so into that moment, when I come out of it, I can't even remember what I've done.
Right.
And that's when I know that it was real.
Yeah.
It happens.
And what was, I mean, you know, I was having this conversation with someone the other day. I think acting is quite a spiritual process. When you actually learn your lines and then you're exchanging energy really with another person.
Yeah.
And then you're living in the moment, you're believable. You know, it must have been hard for you to not laugh when you saw me. That great wig.
In your wig. I was like, excellent. A wig.
But what, what sort of, did you have any funny, you know, when people are talking to you about it, did you have any sort of questions or where people have asked you things actually about what was it like to do this or what was it like to work with Terry or what was it like?
The biggest question of all of it was, what was it like kissing Terry Stone?
Oh my God, I hope you said I was a great kisser.
I was like, it was all very professional. Yeah. And it was acting and it was Tony Tucker and Lucy.
Yeah, well, that's true. And the thing is, it's funny because I haven't had a massive amount of scenes where I'm either kissing somebody or I'm in a bedroom scene or whatever. But lots of people always assume, oh, you know, that must be really good. You know, you get to snog these people or you get to be in bed with these people. And it's like, and I've actually said,
different.
Well, I said to him, I said, there's nothing, there's like 30 or 40 people looking all in a room looking at you like that. There's lights everywhere. There's a camera there.
And it's really
hot.
There's
a microphone there.
It's like,
you're sitting there and it's like the last thing you think is, oh, well, I'm really going to enjoy this. You're
you
just
can't.
Thinking, let's just fucking get
yeah.
it done.
Yeah.
And for me, I we did have this conversation, you know, I'm married and obviously you're engaged. So we have to be respectful. It's got to be believable.
Yes.
But, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was do anything inappropriate, you know, when we're doing that scene. And the thing is, it's, you know, I don't know. It's, I think I've always looked at everything I've done, whether I'm an actor or a producer, in being professional. Because I think that, you know, lots of girls have had this Me Too stuff or they've had people being inappropriate around them. You know, I don't know if you've had anything like that in your career or whether you've been lucky in that you've sort of avoided it.
I have had Me Too cases,
Right.
Yeah.
And have you just literally, because obviously for girls that are watching this or girls that think they're going into the profession or girls that are in the profession, what would your advice be to them, you know, because you obviously had a way that you dealt with it. I mean, you know, it's sort of...
I would... I'm quite protective over younger girls now that are going into the industry.
Right.
And my door's always open as well for... I do have, like, a lot of DMs from aspiring actors that are younger, actresses. And all I say is think about your intuition and your own gut. When you're sitting in a room... and there's someone in there asking you to do something that may be uncomfortable or unsettling. Like for me, one of the times I don't mind talking, the other time I don't really want to talk about, but when I was younger, there was one time where I remember it was in Embankment. So I went to Embankment and then I went into this like flat and it was for a lead for a feature film. Right. And I was going to be the star and all of this stuff. Right. I was in my 20s. So I went up there. And then it was just him with the camera and me. And I performed, and obviously I've come off book, I've worked hard at this audition, all of that stuff,
right.
Performed my little heart out as much as I could for this part. And I thought I really nailed it, like I really enjoyed it. And he was like, you're gonna be the star. Right now, I have to ask you, could you please take your top off? Because I need to see what your figure looks like. And I started feeling really uncomfortable and I was like, oh, so I did, and I was in my bra, and I was like, okay. And there is a scene where she is in a bikini, so I kind of thought...
Went along with it,
that made sense, but in my gut, I was like, I feel really uncomfortable, and there's no one else in this room now,
right?
And I'm taking my top off. But I was so young and naive, and I should have said no. And this is the thing. If you feel where I felt there, you don't do it. And you leave, you get out of there.
Yeah.
But I did because I was like, oh, there is a bikini scene, I better do it. So I took my top off and the next thing he said is, great, okay, so now if you just don't mind taking your bra off in there, and then I felt physically sick, like I've never done nudity in my life and I'm never gonna start and it's something that I don't ever want to do. So at that stage I went, oh, well, there's no nudity in the script and I wouldn't have I wouldn't have come here if there was, because right. I don't want to do nudity. I feel very uncomfortable doing that. And he said, no, you're going to be the star. I have to. This is all, you're very comfortable. It's just us in here. I just need to film it. And so he was saying all of this stuff. So at there, I just ended up saying to him, I've got to leave. And I was like, I've got to leave, actually. I'm feeling really, really uncomfortable. And he was trying to make me stay to the point where I ran out the door.
Wow.
But the moral of the story is for girls and guys, because guys can also get in this situation.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, it's both ways here, where if you just feel uncomfortable and someone is asking you to do something and they're pretending they're in the higher power than you, well, everybody's equal in this world. And if you feel uncomfortable, do not do it. Just say no and go away, because it makes you feel quite sick.
I mean, when I auditioned for the Rise of the Foot Soldier, they asked me to take my top off. And then they looked at me and they went, I think we need to get, gonna need to get a muscle suit. So I was like, okay, fair enough. Because I was a bit like, hang on a minute. I don't think there's any nudity in this film. And they went, no, we just want to see you with your top off.
I will say a big thing as well, shout out again for the crew, the foot soldier crew, is that when I first read Lucy,
right.
There was nudity.
Was there?
Yeah. Right, so okay. When we're dancing, you know, when we come in and Kat and I are dancing after the club, I was meant to then have no top on.
Right.
And my boobs out. So I literally...
You were like, I'm not again.
So I literally, I said to Andy, I said, look, I really want to do this role, but I can't do it.
Right.
And he was like, why? And I was like, because I'm not getting my boobs out.
Right.
I said, I'm comfortable in lingerie
right.
and I'll get in shape for it, but I'm not going to do that, so I'm the wrong actress.
Right.
And then Nick and Andy rewrote the script.
I think it's good, though.
So that's respect. Yeah.
No, but time. I genuinely think that as an actor and actress, you have to have boundaries and you have to say, I'm happy to do that, I'm not happy to do that, and you know, and stick by your guns. You know, if someone says to you, well, you can't have to fit the role, well, if it upsets you in doing it, then why would you do it?
No.
You know?
Yeah.
You just say no.
Yeah. I just didn't see the point of having my boobs out when everyone was sitting in their jackets and then suddenly I'm the one dancing.
It's a bit weird, isn't it?
It's just like, it's not going to happen.
But when you actually think about it, it doesn't actually make any sense.
No.
Unless
it's not like in Titanic, you know, where Kate Winslet... in Titanic...
Right.
With Kate Winslet.
That's what you thought we was recreating in Southend when they were talking about boats. You thought, I don't remember me and Tony standing on a boat like that.
you know, Kate Winslet, she got her boobs out, but she was in an art painting with Leonardo DiCaprio doing an artist nude painting, and it looks stunning and artistic and beautiful.
Yeah.
That is a compromise, depending on the scene and what it is for.
Mm.
But even that, then it's got to be something that's going to catapult your career. But then that's just my opinion. But if you know, there are actresses out there that are just not body conscious at all. Mm. I love those girls. I'm in awe of them. Right. Like, I'm like, oh my God, liberate. You're so liberating. You're empowering me because they are so free and they don't mind.
Yeah, but genuinely, so, you know, I think.
I'm just a bit prude, I think.
I don't think you are. I think if you have a role which. You know, you read the script and there's a reason to be nude, right?
Yeah.
Then I think maybe you go, actually, there's a reason for it. But just like you said, sitting in the room, just sitting there with your tits out, and oh, hello, you know, I'm Lucy and all that. It's sort of a bit like, well, everyone has got their jackets. Why would I?
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually make any sense. Whereas if everyone was sitting there with no clothes on, then maybe
for a
you
reason.
Go, okay, well, if we're all sitting with no clothes on.
Eyes
then,
wide shut.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Very different.
But after Foot Soldier Origins, what happened for you after that? Did you get any more sort of gangster roles, or you know, have you just sort of what sort of happened for you as an actress after that?
So Foot Soldier put me on the map, and then obviously with you,
is that big break?
Yeah, I think that's put me on the map to the next level. And the offers I've got in sit. So from Foot Soldier, the reason it's helped is that I'm getting straight offers for acting.
Brilliant.
More. And obviously still, I did casting last week. So it's still, I'm nowhere near not at the stage where you just get your script given to you. I'm just like, do you want this role? That's the dream.
Right.
Because I really don't like castings. You can't, I just find them really, really tedious. and hard work to get the role, and you do so much work towards it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So I'm really pushing for that next level now. Mm. And with Foot Soldier, what it did do is get me recognised and get me a fan base right. of my own. Yeah. And so now I have this little support fans that just are watching everything I do.
When you walk down the road, do people shout, Lucy?
They have.
That's so funny.
Only a few, so not too much. It's but good, yeah, though, I've had Lucy. I've had Lucy quite, yeah. It's I love it. when they do, it's just gives you so much love. And the then you end up hugging them. You're like, oh, thanks.
But I always find, like, you know, whatever role you do in a film or TV series, if people recognise you for that role...
Yeah,
I've always said it's a positive because people, for people to come up to you and actually mention, you know, I've been in the most weirdest places. Yeah. And people just turn around and gone, I love that film. And you're just like, oh, thanks.
Yeah. And then in different countries.
Yeah, just anywhere. I could be anywhere. I could be sat on a train. I could be in a club.
Yeah.
I could be standing in a urinal, right?
Do you know what?
I could be anywhere. And then people just tap you on the shoulder or they look over you and go, oh my God. And you have a chat with them. And I always find it bizarre.
I had the bizarrest thing ever. I was actually on the phone with Experian and I was talking to them and this guy was in South Africa on the phone.
Right.
And I had to say my name and my details and he went, are you out of the Foot Soldier? And I was like, yeah. He went, oh my God. I couldn't wonder the accent, but he was just like, you're out of the Foot Soldier. That is so good. That's so cool. Like this, he says, oh, I'm speaking. And then suddenly the whole of the call center where he was working, they're like, Lucy, oh, hi. Oh my God. We're talking to Lucy from Foot Soldier like this. And I was
so
like,
funny.
This is the weirdest phone call ever because I'm calling Experian. Like it was just the bizarrest moment to have that happen. Excellent. And I was like, and then they couldn't focus. Right. I needed something done, and I was like, "Okay, can we get back to it?" But yeah,
and when you look at you know other projects that you're working on now and things for the future, what does the future hold for you, Rachel? What are you working on now? I know you're obviously looking at and you have produced movies, and you know you've obviously got your own production company. But let's talk about all the other things you do as well, because it's good for you know anyone watching the podcast knowing. You know, what you got coming up, what else you do on the side.
Amazing. Yes, so I have a few things going. So basically, to wrap it up, in my 20s, I did loads of awful jobs around acting to support it. From Paper Girl, I was out 6 a.m. in the morning at Euston Station handing out papers to all that. It was just, yeah. So when I turned 30, I wanted to build my own company. So I did Pick Up My Parties, Children's Entertainment Company.
Yeah.
And then that went really well. I got onto Channel 5, BBC Billionaire Babies for Kids, like all of this promotion for that. Then COVID hit, and then I decided to close that down because I wanted to be more and more in the industry. So I started my production company. And for that, the reason I did this is solely so that I could cast myself, not necessarily the leads, but cast myself in high quality content.
Right.
Films, TV, whatever it is that I would end up producing with the company. Because I was just so sick of, you know, not getting the roles that I really want to get.
Right.
So I'm making my own opportunities by producing, and I've got a very, very versatile slate of films. I've got a television series that's in discussions at the moment with Netflix.
Yeah.
So that side is really good. At the moment. And then I also started up my own television and film poster design business,
right,
which I love, and I've got the most amazing designers, love you, who are phenomenal. And you know, now we've got to try and learn about the AI side of it so that we can keep up with everything on the design front. So there I've now worked with...
Well, the good news is you won't need designers. You can just get... I'm joking.
So, our industry...
The only good thing
it.
About AI is you could die and then you could still be on screen for another 100 years.
I know.
As long as you're getting royalties from it, I don't mind. But if you're not getting royalties from it, then...
Yeah, there's a lot going on with AI at the moment as well. but I do stand up. I stand for the Writers Guild in America. So we've stopped going towards America with our scripts at the moment because we're respecting it and we're just, you know,
I mean,
waiting
until
it comes
together. You know, lots of people don't understand what the strikes are about with the actors and the writers. But for me, it's, you know, if you're in a successful TV show or film and it goes out to hundreds of millions of people and you're not getting any residuals, I can understand people being pissed off by that. I fully understand
100%.
It. 100%. So, you know, you know, I think it puts the streaming platforms and the studios in an awkward position because obviously their models are all based on not paying residuals. So now if they've got to then start saying, well, we've actually got to start paying people residuals or giving people so much per view or whatever, then obviously they're going to have to put their prices up. And if they put their prices up, are people going to pay 50 quid a month to subscribe to a platform? Probably not, right? Yeah. Or the ones that do will be, you know, instead of it being 230 million people, it might only be 100 million. So, you know, it's... And then obviously then the residuals come down. So it is a balancing act. And, you know, I don't actually see how it's going to get solved. I hope it does get solved because... You know, obviously, if there is no content and if actors aren't allowed to promote the content because of this strike, then that means there's going to be 6 to 9 months next year where the cinemas are going to have no content, the streaming platforms aren't going to have any content, and it is going to be a bit of an odd
time
environment. You know,
again, we've just got over COVID and now we're dealing with all of this.
But I mean, it seems to be a thing, you know, like when people talked about COVID, right, now it seems to be like, you know, everybody's... on strike. So whether it's, you know, the railway people, whether it's, you know, there's teachers, whether it's the actors, it's like everybody's on strike about something. And I understand people are pissed off, right? Nobody enjoys paying more for their electric, their gas, their phone bill, you know, their petrol, their food. Everyone is pissed about that.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, the government did decide, you know, to lock everybody up and stop people going out to obviously stop the virus spreading. And they obviously decided to, you know, if nobody can work, if they hadn't have given people, you know, support, then the whole country would have gone bust. Yeah. So it was like, if we do this, we've got to do that. If we don't do this, people could die. And that's obviously what where we are now is because of that. Yeah. And in hindsight, people will blame the government, but most of the governments around the world did the same thing. So it wasn't like just the UK government. You know, it was a choice that a lot of people made.
Yeah.
And look, if you'd have not locked people down and loads of people had died, then everyone would be going, well, the government's...
You should have locked everyone down.
So whatever the government had done, they would have lost.
Yep.
So it wasn't a win-win. So I think essentially, you know, we've probably got another year, 2 years of it being... You know, what I call fucked up. You know, it's like a technical term. but then once that's over, then hopefully we will get back to some sort of normality and reality and we won't have anything to strike about. And the world will be a better place.
And we're going to be a better place. And we're going to be happy. And we're going to make amazing films. And everyone's going to be happy and get on.
but no, I enjoyed your performance in The Last Heist as well.
Thank you.
And
nominated,
you know,
at Marbella Film
Absolutely.
Festival
Best Actress.
Yeah.
But I definitely think... There's going to be some other projects that we're going to work together on, Rachel, because I've enjoyed working with you as an actor and as a producer.
Yeah.
You know, thanks so much for coming on our podcast,
sharing your
stories you know, talking to us about Lucy.
Yeah.
Because...
Juicy Lucy.
But the Cockney rhyming slang stuff is hilarious. So I'm sure when this goes out, you're going to get inundated with messages with people... bamboozling you. You would have to go to Weatherspoons, I nearly said then. No, Waterstones. You've got to go Weatherspoons. Go to Waterstones.
Terry told me to come to Weatherspoons.
Apparently you do some nice burgers here. But no, you're going to go in with and go to Waterstones and get
a book.
Cockney rhyming slang book. Then when people do send you a message, you can look it up and go, yeah, you think you're clever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Done my research, guys. Remember, I work hard.
Thanks for tuning in to the Criminal Connection podcast. Rachel Warren, a.k.a. Juicy Lucy, what a great guest. Thanks again, and make sure you tune in for next week because we've got somebody extra special.
Hey, Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.